RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. What do we know about the impact of e-cigarettes on smoking habits and on health? E-cigarettes are a relatively new phenomenon, but growing in popularity, from traditional smokers who view vaping as a healthier alternative to smoking tobacco, to impressionable young people ready to take up the next cool habit, ignoring wise advice in the process, as so many youngsters do. Encouraging them along the way are well-heeled tobacco industry marketers, and in between, there are the health professionals. How should doctors advise their smoking patients when it comes to e-cigarettes? The rise and impact of e-cigarettes has been of personal interest to Professor Robert Jackler from the Stanford School of Medicine in California. Professor Jackler is a leading neuro-otologist who heads the Stanford Initiative to Cure Hearing Loss. His mission is to create biological cures for major forms of inner ear hearing loss. And he's visiting Australia next month to speak at the Australian Society of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery 2017 Annual Scientific Meeting in Adelaide. So first question, why would a professor of neuro-otology become so interested in e-cigarettes? Robert Jackler is on the line from California, talking to Heather Dawson.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I am a surgeon, and you wouldn't normally think that an ear microsurgeon would be interested in smoking, let alone the behavior of the tobacco industry. But it came from a personal interest in my family when my mother was dying of smoking-related lung cancer, and my wife is an artist. And so over a decade ago, we became very interested in tobacco advertising, and specifically how the tobacco industry built such a loyal following and became such an enormous industry around the world. And, you know, it began with a collection of tobacco advertisements, and it extended to a collection of perhaps some 40, 50,000 advertisements now. The originals were given to the Smithsonian Institution, which is the American National History Museum in Washington. And we've created an online database, tobacco.stanford.edu, with all of those ads. Now, you can study the history of it, but you can also look at what the tobacco industry is doing today. Most people would think that what the tobacco industry did 100 years ago or 50 years ago was egregious, but today they're better. In fact, if you study the behavior of the industry, and e-cigarettes are an example, they do exactly the same thing they were doing in the heyday of the 1930s or 40s. So the transition to electronic cigarettes as a field of study and interest and advocacy was only a natural thing.
Well, how much reliable research is there now on the impact of e-cigarettes?
Well, increasingly so. There's great interest in the community that studies nicotine addiction and tobacco in electronic cigarettes. They've really only exploded in the last decade, especially over the last 4 or 5 years. But more and more, we understand about their appeal to teens, their appeal to adults seeking to stop smoking, and issues about their safety. But, you know, the most important issues about safety take time to develop, because even smoking regular cigarettes, it takes 30 or 40 years before you get lung cancer and emphysema. So no one's been using an e-cigarette for more than a relative handful of years. So one can only look at toxicity studies as opposed to the actual study of the effect over decades in humans.
Okay, well, would you say that e-cigarettes are safe?
No, they're not safe, but they're almost certainly safer than regular cigarettes. Regular cigarettes, it's the burning leaf, the combustion products, the tar, that causes most of the damage to the lung and the mouth and the throat. On the other hand, electronic cigarettes, while they may be safer than burning leaf traditional cigarettes, are still not perfectly safe. There's nothing especially normal about deeply inhaling over and over propylene glycol and glycerin, which is the basic mixture. Together with that, it includes flavorants that are often aldehydes and ketones that are toxic to the lung lining. In fact, in most industrial flavoring factories, which are making flavors for foods, you know, you have to wear masks and protect yourself against the flavor particles in the air because they damage the lungs. Here we're putting them in a liquid, and people are breathing them in deeply over and over every day. So there are reasons to concern about the vapor from electronic cigarettes not simply being pure water. They're, in fact, a mixture of chemicals. And because they're heated, the heating products sometimes produce formaldehyde and other byproducts that are known to cause cancer.
Right. Well, could you argue that e-cigarettes help smokers quit, and should doctors recommend them to their smoking patients?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So we would like that very much. In fact, if everybody who smoked two packs a day switched over to doing e-cigarettes instead, it would probably be a very good thing. The science now on how well these e-cigarettes work for tobacco cessation is mixed. At most, there's a minor effect. There was a very good study actually out of New Zealand a couple of years ago that showed them to be slightly better than patches and gums, but still well under 10% of adult smokers who wish to quit succeed doing so using e-cigarettes. One of the problems is, take Australia that has very enlightened smoking regulations and laws. You know, you're not allowed to smoke in many places. But there are many places you can't smoke. You may well be able to vape. So we know that discontinuities in nicotine addiction help smokers to quit. But if you're going to your workplace and you're vaping, you're actually keeping your nicotine level high where you wouldn't have been able to otherwise. So sometimes actually paradoxically vaping perpetuates nicotine addiction and makes it even harder to quit regular tobacco.
Okay. Now, are e-cigarettes a gateway to nicotine addiction for young people?
Yeah, that's a serious concern because, you know, all over in the developed world, not in every country, but certainly in America and in Australia and New Zealand, there's a decrease in the number of teens who start smoking. So first of all, you have to realize that almost no one starts smoking as an adult. Smoking initiation is an adolescent experience as teens rebel, and they'll play around with things. The concern is that e-cigarettes, which are becoming trendy and socially acceptable, are leading the 13, 14, 16-year-olds to start picking up these nicotine products and becoming nicotine addicted, which is a very potent form of addiction. So with all of the various flavors, the gummy bear flavors and the cotton candy flavors and peanut butter flavored e-cigarettes, there's a lot of concern that we're creating a new generation of teenagers who are getting hooked on nicotine. And then there's good science that shows teens who regularly use e-cigarettes graduate to traditional combustible cigarettes in substantial numbers. So yes, there's a lot of concern about the gateway effect of e-cigarettes for young people.
So how do e-cigarette brands market these products? Are they targeting young people in particular? What kind of media are they using to reach a new breed of smokers, if you like?
Well, you know, I would have no problem if e-cigarette companies only advertise to adult smokers and use the message, use these to help you quit. But that's not at all what they do. As a matter of fact, they associate them with fun time and relaxation and sports, and they advertise where young people are. You know, Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, they're all over the place on social media. They're in magazines, and even back in America on television, where ads appear in association with popular shows, ads appear in association with major football games like the Super Bowl. So it's actually taking us back to before 1970, where we're seeing lots of youth-targeted ads across many channels and back on TV. And the social media and the web-based marketing is particularly troubling because it's very influential to young people, as you imagine.
So just as advanced populations manage to bring smoking levels down a little bit, would you say that e-cigarettes are renormalizing smoking behavior then?
Right. I mean, where I live in California is probably a lot like Sydney. I mean, if you're standing on the street corner smoking a cigarette, the person going by is thinking, well, maybe that person's unhealthful, doesn't care about themselves, and oh, they'll probably smell. Maybe that's someone I wouldn't want to date, right? Now, the fact that you look at an e-cigarette and a young person may see it as the trendiest, latest thing, it doesn't lead to a bad smell, and it's maybe not unhealthy. Many teens think they're perfectly healthy, which they are not. And so, yeah, so it's actually renormalizing smoking behavior. And that's a very worrisome thing because of all the gains made by public health, by helping to discourage people to smoke. I mean, it's not that public health folks and physicians such as myself are against smokers. In fact, I'm tremendously sympathetic to smokers. They've gotten caught up in a very bad addiction. It's the tobacco industry and its behavior in recruiting young people that really disturbs me. And I'm very much in favor of regulations of the e-cigarette marketplace to prevent their marketing to children and also to do away with product characteristics such as flavors, which we know lure children, fruity flavors. flavors, sweet flavors, really alcohol flavors. You know, think about it. A kid can get a pina colada flavored e-cigarette and break two adult taboos with a single act. What's not appealing about that if you're a rebellious 16-year-old?
Well, regulating or even banning e-cigarettes, you're up against big tobacco industries here. What are the chances of pushing regulation through, do you think?
Well, I've been impressed with what Australia is able to do with the plain packaging regulations and the likes. It depends somewhat on the country. In America, we have the First Amendment for protection of freedom of speech, which makes it very difficult to constrain advertising messages, even false ones, frankly. On the other hand, it is possible to regulate the products to make sure that there's purity and not contamination with heavy metals and things in the vapor liquid, to make sure that flavors which are of differential appeal to young people, or frankly, any flavor except for tobacco flavor. Because, you know, adult smokers are used to tobacco flavor. Teens don't like it at all. And, you know, frankly, what I could see someday, because young people always experiment, is to have basically water vapor e-cigarettes, that is to say e-cigarettes without any nicotine in them at all. And they can come in flavors, and they can be cheap, because kids can then play with them and feel big and grown up. But when they get out of that phase a year or two later, they don't get caught up in the nicotine addiction. And the nicotine ones can cost 10 times more and can only come in tobacco flavor. That way, young people can express their individuality and rebellion, but not get caught as lifetime smokers.
Professor Robert Jackler, Stanford School of Medicine. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.